Welcome to Digging Deeper. I'm Jeff Norris, lead pastor of Perimeter Church, and I'm joined by my co-host, Laura Story Ellington. Digging Deeper equips you to follow Jesus by exploring the teachings of the Bible and how they intersect with our culture and everyday life.
This season, we're digging deeper into parenting, and today we're joined by Sissy Goff and David Thomas. David and Sissy are both licensed counselors and the executive directors at Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, Tennessee. And they also have a brand new book releasing this April entitled Capable, How to Teach Your Kids Strengths, Skills, and Strategies to Build Resilience.
Sissy and David, we're such a joy to talk to. I so appreciate the insight that they give in this episode as these experts on parenting in an anxious age.
Yeah, so if you like this episode, don't forget to bless a friend by sharing it with them. Now let's jump in.
Well, welcome back to Digging Deeper. We're glad if you've been with us. You know that we have been in a series on parenting. If you haven't been with us, maybe you're tuning in for the first time in this series. Maybe go back and listen to the few that we've done so far. But you are in for a treat today. Let me first apologize for my cold, riddled voice. I sound terrible. I don't feel as bad as I sound, I don't think. However, that's not the point today. The point is we have two amazing guests with us that I can't wait for you all to hear from. We have Dave Thomas and Sissy Goff coming to us from Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, guys. Welcome.
Hey, we're so grateful to be with y'all.
Yes, we are.
Now, I don't know if our listeners know this. Some will certainly know this, but Laura knows this, and I know it. These two are kind of a big deal. They are...
We're going to embarrass you guys for a second here.
The Lord has been using them in tremendous ways in the counseling arena, but just through their writing and in speaking. I mean, good grief. I know my wife, Rachel, Sissy, if she could be here right now, she would... probably be fangirling over you. You've had a great impact on her. But
well, tell her I said hi and give her a hug for me.
I will. I will. Let me tell you about these folks. Sissy and David are the co-hosts of, or the hosts of Raising Boys and Girls podcast. So if you don't know about that podcast, check it out. This is pretty mind-blowing. 11 plus million downloads on that podcast. Their goal is to help people care for their kids in your life with a little more understanding, a little more practical help, and a whole lot of hope. I love that. Sissy is the executive director of Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, where she works alongside, I love this, her puppy counseling assistant in training, Patches the Havanese. Since 1993, she's been helping girls and their parents find confidence in who they are and hope in who God is making them to be. She is the best-selling author of 14 books, including her first full-color children's book, Lucy Learns to Be Brave, A Lesson in Courage. David also is the executive director of Daystar Counseling Ministries there in Nashville, co-author of 11 books, including his first full-color children's book called Owen Learns, He Has What It Takes, A Lesson in Resilience. He and his wife, Connie, have three adult children, a new son-in-law, a soon-to-be daughter-in-law, and a yellow lab named June. And so there's a lot of things that we can and will recommend on our show notes, but we'll just mention their new book called Capable, How to Teach Your Kids the Strengths, Skills, and Strategies to Build Resilience. That's coming out in April of 2026.
And so we were kind of joking about how you guys are a super big deal, but I want to ask kind of a serious question. What is it about your approach to counseling or your approach to maybe the issues that children are dealing with these days? What is it that has so resonated with people?
That's a really great question, Laura. I don't think anyone's ever asked us that. You know, I think there are a lot of really amazing therapists, as we know, out in the world. And I would say, David, I would be curious your answer, but I think we've been in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the right time is maybe a better way to say it. I mean, we have been therapists for over 30 years. We've been writing books for a long time. We've been podcasting for a while. And I think for me, when things started resonating in God's providence and in His care for all of us, He set up, basically, it kind of fell into my lap to write these books on anxiety for parents of girls, for elementary school age girls, 3 months before the pandemic started. And as we know, anxiety just skyrocketed. Yes, at that point. And then in the midst of it, I became most worried about adolescent girls. And so I ended up writing a book for them about anxiety at that point. But I think it just, I think it feels like we have kind of stumbled into places where we get to have a voice helping and have a lot of years of experience of sitting with kids and families. And I hope, you know, there are definitely people who say they feel kind of beat up on by parenting expert-y people. And our hope is always that people feel like we're coming alongside them, offering a lot of hope and a lot of practical suggestions. David, what would you add?
You know, it's interesting that you said just that at the end of responding, because I think, Laura, as you were asking that question, that's really my great hope. I think there's so many voices, not just in the parenting space, but in the world space that are yelling or I think leading with fear. And I think fear is already just raining down on all of us all the time. And so Sissy and I just don't have any interest in adding to that. You know, we laugh a lot with folks about having worked alongside pet therapist for all these years, and we've learned a lot from working with these dogs. We've learned a lot of humility. It's such a gift to daily be in a practice where you are outperformed by a dog all the time. Like, they are hands down the kids' favorite therapist.
Yes.
Like, we're so late in line.
That's amazing.
And so I think the other thing that they've taught us is I love the wisdom of those words, you know, the bumper sticker that says less barking, more wagging. And I think that's a lot of what I feel like our world is needing in all the spaces, and this space in particular. Like, to Sissy's points, parents don't need another voice making them feel overwhelmed or as if they are fumbling the ball. And so we very much want to be a different voice in that space. That's important to both of us.
Yes.
You guys mentioned anxiety. So let's just start there. Tell us, how do you define anxiety? And you mentioned the connection with the pandemic, but I'm sure it's more than that.
Yes.
And it feels as if this is a word I'm hearing more when it comes to parenting and raising children. So maybe what is it and why is it more of an issue now than maybe that it's ever been before?
That's a great question. It is definitely, the pandemic is a part of it. And we're seeing more kids with social anxiety specifically than ever before. And also, we could talk about I won't go into that right now, but we could talk about how the pandemic, I think, contributed to some rigidity that we're seeing in kids as a part of their anxiety. But, you know, now we're looking at 1 in 4 kids are dealing with it, 1 in 3 adolescents, 1 in 3 adults, and girls are twice as likely to deal with it as boys. Boys are actually taken to get help, and which is interesting, and we could talk about why, too. And I read a lot in researching those books. And the definition I came up with out of all the research is that anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and an underestimation of themselves. And so when thinking about where it's coming from, technology certainly is a very significant factor. We love the work of Jonathan Haidt and The Anxious Generation, and it outlines it beautifully. Social media for adolescents. We feel like there's more pressure on kids to perform in all aspects of life than there's ever been. Mm-hmm. That's a piece of it. And we would say, hopefully with a whole lot of grace for any parent listening, that what research says too is the two most common parenting strategies in light of anxiety are escape and avoidance. And we would add at this point, which we can get into with the capable material, relief. That parents are wanting relief for their kids. They're rescuing them as a result of that. And if you go back to that definition, anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and an underestimation of themselves. If I'm rescuing a child, if I'm helping them escape whatever's making them anxious, I'm furthering the definition. You're right. It is too big. It is too hard. You can't handle it. Never, never, ever, ever what I'm intending to communicate, but that's what they absorb when we do that, rather than you can do hard things. I believe in you and we're going to figure it out together. So I would say those are kind of the primary factors adding into it at this point in time.
That's good. I'm curious just to maybe dig into that a little bit more. Can you give, I'm thinking about the parent out there that is rescuing, but maybe not knowing how they're rescuing. So is there maybe one or two specific examples you can give of what rescuing looks like that a parent may hear and go, oh, that's rescuing? Oh, I'm doing that all the time. I didn't know I was doing that.
We can give so many.
I bet you can.
You know, I'd say in starting, I loved even the way you asked that question, because I do think often parents are unaware. It's an unconscious movement. I don't know any parent who desires to be rescuing for the sake of, you know, holding their kids back. So I think it is often, I'm not aware of all the ways it's playing out. And I think the other thing to consider as we think on it is that, you know, watching the kids we love struggle isn't intuitive. Mm-hmm. Like, everything in us wants to move toward relief. So I think we have to move against a bit of a factory setting in a lot of ways. And being reminded that, you know, if we think about the age-old statement of growing pains, we know that to be true. Like, when kids' bodies are growing, there's sometimes a pain that comes with that. And when our, you know, minds are growing, it's often through hard academic work. And so placing that in the center of so many different decisions that are tempting to make. So I'll give one example related to boys. I've talked a good bit over the last couple of years about how often I am sitting with adolescent boys or meeting with parents of adolescent boys who are reporting their sons aren't interested in getting their driver's license. And 30 years ago at the beginning of this work, I don't ever remember having that conversation. If I think about my own growing up, I didn't know a single teenager who wasn't chomping at the bits. But it's just this delay, this lack of interest, this lack of motivation. And, you know, at the heart of that, I think, is risk. And I could stack on top of that boys who are not interested in asking a girl to a homecoming dance or pursuing getting a part-time job or applying to college. The statistics around males and females entering college as undergrad has actually flipped over the last several decades. And the suspicion is, if we keep trending in the direction we're trending, you know, at some point in the next 20 years, we'll hit a place where only 30% of students entering undergrad will be male. And I want to be very clear in saying I am celebrating as much as anyone the fact that more girls are pursuing that path than ever. And I also want to say, I don't think college is the end-all be-all for every student, but I'm concerned about a lot of the reasons behind why I think boys aren't pursuing the risk of college. And I think it starts with, all the way back to the front side of, I hear a lot of elementary age boys who are like, I just don't really want to join a club, or I don't want to play a sport, or I don't like going to practice. And that intuitive move to want to rescue in those moments when he's not motivated or pushing against, that I think is that lack of awareness we want to really lean into, that's not helping the kids and adolescents we love.
That's good. Yeah. Sissy, anything you'd add to that in terms of maybe an example from a girl side of things? Or
yes. Well, I had a conversation with a couple last week, and they have a 3-year-old girl and a newborn, and their daughter all of a sudden has got a good bit of separation anxiety, which is so normal at that age. And it's especially normal with oldest girls who, if we go back to rigidity and control, there's a whole lot of that going on with a lot of oldest girls, the majority of oldest girls. And she just simply does not want to be away from her mother. And so rest time, taking a nap, going to bed at night, I mean, she just loses her mind and gets so dysregulated to the point that one of her parents is sleeping in her room all night, or she's sleeping with her parents every night. And I was gently trying to talk about some things they could do to put some boundaries around her and even ways to incentivize staying in her room. And her mom said, is it okay if she's crying in her room for a little bit? I feel like, is that going to damage my relationship with her long term? And I think that's part of what's happening today, which we could talk about extensively. And y'all, as we think about anxiety in kids, I mean, there's certainly a cycle that's happening where David and I push really hard in the new Capable book at some of the parenting experts that are out there these days and parenting theories that we think are making things worse. We think they're making parents more anxious, and we think they're making kids more dependent and even more rigid. And I think that's part of the thing. Her saying, is it okay for me to let her cry in her room for a minute, or is that going to damage my relationship with her forever? And I really, this week, have had three versions of that same question. And y'all, I talked to a friend, a pediatrician, last week, and she said she had seen this mom, soon-to-be mom, and sent her out, and a nurse came and got her and said, I need you to come to the parking lot. And she went out to the parking lot, and this woman was trying to buckle the car seat in the car and was sobbing. And my friend said, what's happening? And she said, I'm just so afraid to do this wrong. She said, the internet is making me crazy. Which there it is.
Wow.
You know, it's like all these people, to David's point, are barking at, telling you exactly what you're supposed to do. And if you're not doing it exactly right, you're going to make it worse for your kids. And if your kids cry, you have made it worse. And so, or if your kids are in pain or need rescue. And so you've got to step in and fix it. And then kids don't learn to work through it. So there's a scary self-perpetuating cycle that's happening in the world today.
Yeah, gosh, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, my goodness, we could make this a 3-hour episode because I have so many thoughts and questions. We're not going to keep you that long. So don't panic. But what would you say? Because you're hitting on something there that I think is drilling down perhaps to the root of it. And we sent you some questions beforehand, and you've already probably you've noticed that I've already asked you a question that wasn't on the sheet. But anyway,
these are more guidelines. We don't really follow those.
Y'all are so fun to talk to. We'll talk about anything.
Okay, well, I'm getting back to one we did send you of just kind of like, what do you think is at the root of it? But maybe, and when I say of it, I mean of the anxiety dilemma that we're facing, but not just for children, but for parents as well. Because, you know, I think about Rachel and I, my wife and I have talked about, why are we so anxious? We admit it. We say, hey, I'm way more anxious as a parent than I ever remember my parents being, you know? And we talk about our childhood in the 80s and the freedoms that we have. And my kids hear that and go, oh my goodness, I wish I'd have been raised in the 80s. That sounds amazing.
Yes.
And then I think, oh my goodness, why have I raised my kids in a way where they have to think that way? Like, why didn't I raise them like I was raised in the 80s? Mm-hmm. And then I think, well, because is the root of it that we know too much and we're too fearful because of overinformation? Anyway, I'll stop talking, let you guys speak to it. But what, as we dig into it, what might be at the center of it all?
We laugh so much about how we're older than you all, but my parents, when I was growing up, they read one parenting book, and I think it was the only parenting book that existed. It was Dr. Spock's Baby and Child Care. And the one thing that my mom took from book was smile at your kids. I mean, that's the whole thing she got. And if you were around me or my sister, that's like our highest compliment we've gotten our whole lives is that we smile a lot. So mom really took it to heart. But y'all,
there you go.
What we're talking about, I had a mom recently who said to me, it's like today we have paralysis by analysis. And there is so much. I think, Jeff, to your great point, I do think we know too much. We want so much good for kids. We want to do it right so much. I mean, there's so many beautiful things that are a part of this anxiety. And there are too many voices speaking into it. And we feel like parents today are trusting their gut less because of all the voices speaking into it than we've ever seen. I had a mom, and then I'm going to stop talking and let David talk, but I had a mom recently too who said to me that over the holidays, she had been with her family and she said, my teenage daughter started being really disrespectful. She embarrassed me so badly and I didn't know what to do. And so I got my phone and I went to the bathroom, and this is not going to surprise you all, and it might, but I got on my favorite parenting app and I got onto the chat bot and said, what do I do when my teenage daughter is disrespectful? And it's heartbreaking to me that that's where she would go rather than, I know what to do. I'm the mother God gave her on purpose. And so I can handle this. Mm-hmm. But we feel like there's this, we call it expert-based parenting in a chapter where we talk about the swings and extremes we're seeing among parents over all these years. What would you add, David?
Well, I would just add to that by saying it is fascinating how often we find ourselves talking, the very conversation we're sharing about saying to parents, you know, the greatest gift we can offer the kids we love is to do our own work. Because if worry, if fear, if anxiety are getting in the way, I just can't be all of who God designed me to be as a parent. And to the very story Sissy just said, you know, I can't trust my gut. I can't access the knowing that I've been given the gift of the Holy Spirit. So I have everything inside of me. God's equipped me to be the parent of this particular kid. But losing sight of that, you know, we talk about if you can't quiet the voice of worry, you can't hear the voice of God. Mm. And so in that moment, that sweet and well-intentioned mom couldn't quiet the voice of worry. So it's like the only thing I know to do is reach out to a chatbot in those moments. And so I think it is the gift and the curse of having access to so much information. And for all the great things technology has brought into our world, there are a lot of hurdles that exist. And the same being true for kids. You know, I was thinking, I love when you asked that question, thinking back on our growing up as kids of the 70s and 80s, and the reality being because we didn't have access to all this information, if a group of people were getting together on the weekend and I wasn't invited, I had no way of knowing that. Yeah. I might have found out about it the next week, and I might not have. And kids could find out in real time. And not just know that it was happening, know exactly where it's happening. Like follow maps in a way that would allow them to identify where are all these people in this moment and I'm not included. So information is great in so many ways, and it's a hurdle in others. And we've got to figure out how to use it responsibly so we aren't plagued by this fear.
Yeah, that's so good. And us figuring out how to use it responsibly so that we can model that for our children. One of the things I wanted to mention to you guys and to our listeners, the episode right before this one, we did with a guy named Joey Odom, who's talking about phones. He's talking about just how it's affected parenting. So if you haven't listened to the one before this, just for our listeners, check that out. But I want to jump real quick, and because we can't keep you guys all day. You're talking about the pressures that parents feel, and I know this is not your latest resource, but I wanted to mention this book that you guys have called Are My Kids on Track? I feel like you were reading my diary when you came up with the title. Because talk about the anxiety. I feel like every parent I talk to, that's what they're worrying about, but you actually give just some really helpful milestones that we can look for that may actually be different than the milestones we think we should be looking for. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
You know, that book, you're so kind in what you said about it, was actually a lot of fun to write because I think it could have been, if I think about the timeline, really the front side of us seeing the rise of this overwhelm with parents and that we wanted to put some definition around and clarify some of the social and emotional and spiritual milestones we want to see kids moving toward throughout development. And we talk about how those are different than the physical milestones that, you know, we want to see kids crawling at a certain point, walking at a certain point, pulling up, all the different physical milestones that are necessary to their growth and development. These are ones kids are going to be hopefully moving toward, progressing toward all throughout. So it's not like I've mastered empathy by my 12th birthday, but I'm hopefully working toward. And so we define each of those. And then more importantly, we wanted to talk about what are some really practical ways that we could strengthen these emotional and social muscles. And so we break down each chapter according to a milestone. And then we go even further by talking about here's some of the stumbling blocks of what it looks like for boys, stumbling blocks for girls, and then here are the building blocks for each along with those practical ideas. So you were kind to mention that.
Yes, you are.
It was so helpful.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thinking about the parent that, you know, is going, my goodness, this is so helpful. You know, I'm thinking, okay, there's so much that you guys have written about that there's just no way that we could cover in a quick 30 to 35 minute episode here. And so a lot of what I think I would say to the listener or person watching on YouTube is to check out their resources and really, I don't want this just to feel like, hey, this was a big promotional ad, but it kind of is in some ways because it's like, hey, we're going to have a brief conversation that hopefully helps you dive into the resources that are available to you from David and Sissy and know that, gosh, what they've put out there is really helpful. And because I think part of what a parent feels is in an age of overinformation, what are the resources I can go to that really are helpful, that really are going to push me in the direction that I want to go in as a Christian parent? Because I'm convinced, and I'm getting to a question here, but I'm convinced that what we have to do as Christian parents is we have to raise our children counterculturally. Mm-hmm. But then the question becomes, okay, what does that look like? What does it look like to raise counterculturally? Because some might hear that and go, well, then that means, am I raising my kid in a way to where they feel totally left out of everything because they don't have a phone, they don't have access to what every other kid has access to, and then they feel like the black sheep in every context, you know, those kind of things. And so there's a lot that I could dig into there, but here's the question to the parent. I'd love both of you all, but both of you to speak to the parent who feels like, I have blown it already. Mm. Like I have already been way too anxious. I've modeled anxiety for my kid. And one of the reasons I think they're so anxious, cause I'm so anxious. And I just need a word of encouragement. I need a lifeline. What would you say to that parent?
Well, I would say in one of the things that we're seeing now is so much perfectionism in kids. And I think for me, especially in girls, I worry so much about these girls who are pushing themselves so hard. And I think for any parent listening, even if you have an adolescent and they would never say this out loud anymore, you are their heroes. And you are who they look to the most to take their cues for who they want to be in the world. And so if you are a fallible human being and you're saying, hey, I've been missing some things. I've been really blowing it and I want to do something different. And you know what? I've been parenting you out of fear and that's not who I want to be. And so I'm going to work on my worry right alongside you.
Yes.
And I think... You know, so many of us, as we're talking about how we grew up with parents who were in a different place, we didn't have parents who talked about their emotions. We didn't have parents who were passing feelings charts around the dinner table. We didn't have parents who were often saying, I'm sorry. We didn't have parents who were modeling healthy coping strategies. And I would 10 times out of 10 rather have a parent with a child who is failing in front of them and showing them what grace looks like and what it looks like that we're all still figuring it out, that we're still on the journey. And I think how hopeful that is for a kid who's experiencing that too. And we know Jesus to the degree that we know that we fail. And so we're just showing what that looks like on a daily basis with the kids we love. So it's never too late. We would say that over and over.
That's good.
Amen.
Amen. I was thinking as you were saying that, Sissy, one of my dearest friends is a man in his mid-60s, and he is both a father and a grandfather of multiple kids now. And when I see him, when we spend time together, I will often, you know, ask, how are you? And he answers almost identically every time. He will say, I'm growing. And then he'll say, you know, next day might be, David, can I tell you something God is teaching me about being a dad today? He's in his mid-60s and still learning about what it means to be a father, as he is a grandfather also. Can I tell you something God showed me about being a husband this week? And I think that beautiful reminder, like, we are all still growing. We can all still be learning new things. To Sissy's wisdom, it's never too late. I had a hilarious exchange in the Charlotte airport with a mom who... She bought a copy of a workbook I wrote for elementary age boys, and she bought it for her 7-year-old son. And she said, I said, thanks for getting that. She goes, it's been super helpful for him. She goes, it's been a game changer in my marriage. I use it with my husband all the time. And I laughed at her and loved that reporting. And she would tell me these stories of her husband and son working through it together, and that she could see all this great evidence of growth in her husband in his late 30s of learning emotional skills alongside his son that he didn't get when he was his son's age. So there is always opportunity for us to be growing and learning.
David, what a bonus. You found out that you're writing a book for boys and didn't realize it was going to be great for husbands too.
For grown boys.
Exactly. Yeah, for grown boys.
Well, it works in that space.
Well, how about we land the plane? Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can close us out, Jeff. And this kind of overlaps with the last question. But let's say I'm seeing tendencies of anxiety and worry in my child. What is my first step?
That is a really good question, too. I would say I mean, not to be an infomercial at all, like you said, Jeff, but we really have written the book. I mean, especially the worry-free book. So there's Raising Worry-Free Girls, and then there's Braver, Stronger, Smarter for Girls. And for you, Raising Emotionally Strong Boys and Strong and Smart for Boys. I mean, we wrote those books as a first line of defense. And in fact, if people were calling our offices about counseling, we would have our office staff say, hey, get these books first, because this is the first 3 months of counseling that they, the things they would tell you to do. And it's things like teaching them to regulate their breathing. You know, kids need to know where anxiety registers first so calm their bodies down, because until we can calm their little amygdalas down, which are the part of the brain that takes over during worry, we're not going to get anywhere. And then teaching them practical things like grounding techniques, where we're appealing to their senses. Tell me 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, that whole thing, 3 things you feel. I mean, those kind of ideas. And then teaching them to, I call it bossing back the worry. You call it
wrestle down the worry.
Where they're saying, worry, you're not the boss of me. I'm not going to listen. You know, to remind themselves that they're stronger than the worry. But I think practical things like that are throughout the books. But those are really our first 3 lines of defense against worry.
And then I would only add to that, you know, one of the things that is of such importance to the two of us is, you know, we're living in this moment where our kids' faith is way over here and their feelings are way over here. And it's like the two rarely ever overlap. And we always want things working together. And so all of our writing, all of our teaching, all of the content we want to put out is hopefully always living at that intersection of best practices and a foundation of faith. And we want kids to know and experience, like, your faith is this incredible tool that can inform this journey with worry and fear. And scripture has so much to fear. And so how could we be overlapping in those spaces over and over? And that was of such importance to us and all of the content that we put out through the podcast, through our writing and teaching.
Well, this has been absolutely fantastic and just the tip of the iceberg. So I am excited about our listeners. I say I'm excited about our listeners getting your resources. Like, I'm literally going to get on Amazon right or wherever I find wherever it is, I'm finding those books so I can start reading them tomorrow.
Well, and hopefully the new book will be helpful too.
Oh, I believe it will.
100%. 100%. I just want to say thank you to you both. What an important topic that we've been addressing today, but then your writings and what you've put out there as resources are so helpful for any parent at any phase and stage of the game. And you know, I just think about my own story. Our listeners that are Perimeter Church members know my story and kind of my history with anxiety, and how that's, you know, I don't know that they know as much about how we've dealt with it in some of our kids as well. And it really is so prevalent. I mean, the stats that you said at the beginning, Sissy, about 1 in 4, say those again for me real quick, because I want to remember those. It was 1 in 4 and 1 in 3, right?
And 1 in 3 adolescents and 1 in 3 adults. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's very few people are listening to this who aren't going, oh man, okay, this is something that I need to understand. And from a biblical standpoint and from a Christian worldview standpoint, know how to engage with it. And so, grab their resources, let those be a blessing to you. And this is really just an introductory conversation to help you as the listener here and the viewer here to know where some next steps are for help and, in your parenting journey and in the life that your kids are going to be living, Lord willing, for the next many, many decades as they then raise kids themselves. So bless you guys. Thank you so much. We're grateful for you. We're grateful for your ministry. And we're grateful for the time that you spent with us today.
Thank you for having us. You two are a delight to share time with.
Yes, you are.
Well, thanks again. And thanks for you joining in to watch and to listen and stay with us. We got more episodes coming up.
And we got Gary Chapman coming up next. 5 love languages. Can't wait to hear how that applies to parenting.
By the way, you have probably used the 5 love languages at some point in your life and didn't realize, oh, there's a guy who came up with that. And that's who we're talking to next. So tune in for that. And thanks for joining us for this one.